Blog Talk Radio.
Hey everybody, this is the Coast to Coast Radio Show, and I'm your host, Ron Fitch. And today's a smorgasbord of sporting events that's going on between the Major League Baseball playoffs, big college football games. You have the boxing match, and you have the NFL, a couple of really good NFL games. I'm going to go right into the game last night, Toronto versus Kansas City, and Kansas City shutting out the mighty Toronto Blue Jays. And this was really all about Edison Volquez, who just came in and was throwing 97-mile-an-hour fastballs, moving the ball all over the plate. Then he mixed it up with his changeup. And he also got that call because he was close, whether it was a ball or not, on the outside corner plate. And Encarnacion and Bautista was upset. They got struck out a couple times. And they're looking at the umpire. Kansas City was – and Edison Volquez had five strikeouts. The Edison Volquez, it was winless in the postseason, and he was 0-4 against the Blue Jays. The Blue Jays hit him, and they hit him hard. And they hit him this year, and that was a game where there was many fights, and he was thrown at the batters. He basically imploded, and they put it on him. And this time he reversed that and changed up and really showed poise. And the thing about the Kansas City Royals is Edison Volquez and Johnny Cueto have major King Kong-size chips on their shoulder going into the postseason, not having good postseasons and Johnny Cueto, okay, regular season. These guys are very, very determined, and you can see their purpose, and that helps the Royals. And that's another reason I picked the Royals to go to the World Series. They won 5-0. I love the way they came out with the hitting. And Gordon comes up the plate, takes 9 pitches, finally gets a double, and Alcides Escobar, who's very underrated, a great fielding shortstop, can hit and always is in the middle of rallies, gets a double. And then Lorenzo Cain is just a big-time RBI guy in the postseason. He got a single. Perez, he's a great hitting catcher. He hits a home run, and you're off to the races. And went 5-0. Just some interesting observations watching the game. The Royals came in ready because they are on a mission. On a mission to get back to the World Series, on a mission to win the World Series, because they got there last year and was in Game 7, and Bumgarner shut them out, and they were right there. And they want to get back badly. And the Blue Jays were a little flat. I wonder if their heads were still in the Texas series. That was an emotional 7th inning. They beat Texas, a lot of almost near fights. And Bautista hitting that home run and flinging the bat and celebrating and basking in the glow of the victory. And you got another series. And the Royals came ready. And come 4 o'clock today, the Blue Jays better show up and David Price better show up. And David Price has had troubles against right-handed hitters in the postseason. They hit .318 against them. He's lost his last 6 starts in the postseason. So he's got to get it together going against your Yordano Ventura. And Yordano Ventura, I've seen him pitch really good. I've seen him kind of implode at times. He's a very emotional kid. And he had to keep his emotions in check and just do what he does, because he throws a great fastball and he does what he has to do. And, Kansas City could jump out to a 2-0 lead going into Toronto. And now you just have to win one in Toronto to get back to Kansas City and finish them off. But that's a long way. Toronto could win, change the look of the series. But this is a swing game here, game 2, to swing the momentum either way. The other game is the New York Mets versus the Chicago Cubs tonight. This is the night. And this is exciting. I mean, I'm a Cub fan. I know a lot of Mets fans out here in the New York area. This is going to be a very, very interesting. Both fan bases are just reluctant to get too excited. You see the Mets, and I just look at them, and I respect the Mets. And and just the pitchers and David Murphy assessment is completely scares me. Just looking at them like, oh my gosh, going into Citi Field with kids, basically, 20, 21-year-old superstar, potential superstar kids, but kids nevertheless going out into Citi Field. And then Mets fans are texting me, I'm scared of the Cubs because they're hitting. So both fans have been hurt so bad and has so much bad negative things happen. I mean, of course, the Cubs way more than the Mets. The Cubs have stunk. They haven't had a lot of bad playoff memories because they haven't been to the playoffs a lot. Leon Durham, you know, the Bart Man, Manny Ramirez hitting grand slams against them when they imploded against the Dodgers. It's not long, but it's just bad because you just haven't won in 109 years. You haven't been to the World Series since 1945. So there's just, you know, but the fans are pumped up. Some are still a little nervous. And on the Mets side, you have a lot of baggage because you have 2006, I believe, where they imploded. They haven't won all the time. They've kind of been up and down. When they're down for quite a while. 88 with Kirk Gibson. But they righted that wrong when they beat the Dodgers recently. That kind of erased their memory a little bit. But there has always been some close. You've gotten close, but not close enough. And the Mets have to feel like this is their year with this pitching staff. You know, Matt Harvey going tonight. Matt Harvey got the on tonight. He's got to pound that strike zone. The key for him is pound the strike zone. Don't get too emotionally wound up. Trust your stuff. One thing that really makes me really nervous as a Cubs fan is they have struggled against 95-mile-an-hour fastball pitchers. They have a tendency to chase because you're young. These are 20, 21-year-old, 22-year-old batters who are good, but they're young. So once that ball gets past your eye level and you swing at a high fastball, you're going to miss most times than not. And Harvey has to know that. And then when the coaching staff discusses that, that's a key for the Mets to win. Is listen, they're young. Let's take advantage of their youth. Let's take advantage of their aggressiveness. Let's pitch high in the zone and strike them out that way. And that's going to be the key to get guys like Schwarber and Rizzo and Bryant, who are on a roll for the Cubs, to get them out. And from a Cubs standpoint, like I said, it's all about the head. You got to cut the head of the snake off. The head of the snake is Daniel Murphy. Daniel Murphy's in the center of everything. He's the key to every single rally. You got to figure out. And I'm gonna watch it. I'm gonna see if they're gonna pitch Daniel Murphy on the outside corner and see what he does with it. If you're throwing the ball inside, like I said, or you're throwing the ball down the plate, it's gonna take you deep. You're gonna see him hit one out. You might even see him hit two out there if you're stupid enough, you know, to pitch him that way. And Cespedes, you know, he's going to strike out, but he's going to hit one. He's going to take you deep because that's just the way he is. But he is not as consistent as Daniel Murphy. And I wonder if Mets fans will even cry about losing Cespedes in free agency if they can keep Daniel Murphy. I'm paying Daniel Murphy. What do you need? How much money do you need? Because he is worth it. You don't want to lose a guy like Danny Murphy who hits for average and power and doesn't really get out in the postseason. When you got a guy in the middle of the lineup like that, it just brings fear to the other team because you're like, how do we get this guy? It'll mess with your head after a while. And then what if Wilmer Flores gets going? What if Conforto gets going? They got hitters too. You know, and they got guys that can get going. Lucas Duda has been asleep at the wheel. What if he wakes up? Because he hits homers in bunches. He gets hot, and he really gets hot. Or he'll get real cold. He's real cold right now. You don't want to wake him up. Because that's a dangerous thing if you try to wake a Lucas Duda up, and then the Mets get going that way. Like I said on yesterday's show, how does the Cubs walk into New York City into a loud, rocking Shea Stadium building rocket, not like St. Louis, where half the joint they're rooting for the Cubs. That won't happen here in Citi Field, where you'll have half the building rooting for the Cubs, and it's a friendly environment, half the building rooting for the – oh, no. You might have a couple of Cubs fans. You won't have that many. This building will be packed. It'll be rocking with Yankees. Mets fans, it's going to be intimidating. And if the Mets ever get the lead or they take one deep or Cespedes takes one deep and you're down to Harvey and Harvey's throwing 95-mile-an-hour gas, how do you handle it? That's going to be the key to the Cubs and if they have any chance of winning. How do you handle that adversity? How do you handle adversity of the Mets throwing with everybody? Everybody's throwing 95-plus. That's going to be out there pitching, including the relievers. So you get no break. Familiar, 95-plus. You know, so that's going to be the interesting scenario of that series. I'm going to sit back and watch tonight and see, you know, what they're made of. Now, it's college football because it's Saturday. And, yes, if it's a big college football game, you know Alabama, University of Alabama is in it. Alabama is traveling to Texas A&M to play the Texas A&M Aggies. And I understand Alabama looks like they're back and they're rolling. I'm still not convinced about this Alabama team because playing a spread option type offense, a good one. You have a bad spread option, they're going to blow you up because the defense is good. But I just wonder if Kirby Smart and Nick Saban have finally adjusted to trying to stop the spread option. Like, they went to Georgia and blew Georgia out, but Georgia was a running team. That's right up Bama's alley. You're going to play Smash Mouth? Forget us. We invented Smash Mouth. So Alabama likes that, but this is not. Now, Texas A&M is a lot more physical offensively. They are, and they're a lot tougher defensively. And offensively, Alabama is going to have to deal with Texas A&M. They have the two best pass rushers in the country coming hard off the edge and against Coker. I'm not completely sold on Coker yet. I love Derrick Henry. He can run strong and all those guys in the backfield, but you're going to have to beat A&M with the pass. I don't know if I trust him yet. I got to see more of him. And then when you switch it off the defense, how does Kirby Smart and Nick Saban stop Kyle Allen? Kyle Allen, and it's the ultimate weakness of Alabama. They struggle with running quarterbacks who are accurate at the same time. I mean, and you see the Ole Miss game. You see what Johnny Football did to him. You've seen what Nick Marshall did to him in the past. And this feels like the same thing. I got A&M upsetting Alabama in a tight game. And Alabama has been handled on the road a lot. And I just, even though Texas A&M has historically a bad record at home against ranked teams, I like Texas A&M in an upset today. Until I see Bama stop, that's the spread offense, I'm not picking them. And then when they do, I'll change up and I'll roll with the tide. I am not rolling with the tide today. I'm going to pick the Texas A&M Aggies down there in Lubbock, Texas, and they're going to have a celebration. That's my pick. Now we're going to go to Michigan and Michigan State. Michigan State's dominated this rivalry. But now there's a new sheriff in town. His name is Jim Harbaugh. And the last three games, Michigan's pitched three shutouts. That is not easy to do in this offensive college football atmosphere where you have a team that they shut out two ranked teams. So they shut out Northwestern, they shut out BYU, who were ranked at the time. They destroy them. They're destroying teams. They're playing better and better and better. And Connor Cook, listen, I love Connor Cook's stats, 1,334 yards passing, 12 touchdowns, only two interceptions. I love it, but he's going to be under duress today. And even though Jake Redick doesn't have the best numbers, 5 touchdowns, 6 interceptions, he's getting better for Michigan. And Michigan's more of a physical, you know, Devon Smith is going to pound you. Like, you know, he's built that offense like he built the 49ers. Three tight ends, two tight ends, set up the run, set up a run formation, pass off it. He doesn't just run, run, run. He'll give out funky type of formations where he'll have three tight ends, but then he'll use a passing play off a running, off a known running down situation. So you can't, like, figure Harbaugh out. It's harder to game plan around that because you don't know. And that's the element of surprise that I love about Jim Harbaugh and his offense. And Michigan State struggle. And you struggle with Rutgers. Barely. I mean, Rutgers had to throw a fourth down spike to lose to you. And that's kind of like my – Rutgers is my college I graduated from. And that's kind of like the representation of the Rutgers University with all the problems with the football team, with basketball coaches throwing balls at players and having players take their pants down. And we have the AD with a sketchy pass. It's just – we spike the football on fourth down. That's kind of the MO of Rutgers, spiking the football on fourth down. That's who we are. That was a good scenario that happened. You know, I hate to say that because I really love my alma mater. I had a great experience at Rutgers, but it's just they have to get it together. Right? That's a sidebar. Now, Florida Gators versus the LSU Tigers. Florida, see, what I'm worried about is Trevon Harris has to replace their quarterback. And I'm just, you know, I'm just concerned, you know, how do you stop, you know, without Will Greer? I mean, you could go heavy dose of Kevin Taylor, but against that physical LSU defense, and LSU will sneak in the pass. Trevon Doral will sneak in, his catches in because you're going to load up on Leonard Fournette and then you're going to forget Doral and forget it, Doral, and he can burn you. And I think that's how LSU is going to beat Florida. But it's going to be close, even though it's in this swamp and LSU. Florida's defense is really good, really good. So I don't think LSU is going to, and they're not a team that just runs up the score on you anyway. I think it's going to be 10-3, 10-6, 14-6 type of win for LSU. I'm gonna ride the LSU Tigers again to stay undefeated. And if Will Greer was going to play, I was so pumped for this game. And I gave Florida a puncher's chance with Will Greer, but I don't. With Trevon Harris is a good runner, okay thrower. And Les Miles knows that. And the Mad Hatter is going to be waiting for him. And he'll probably have some trick play set up, especially for this game. Now, we go to the NFL. And the big game is the Buffalo Bills versus the Cincinnati Bengals. And this would have really been a bigger game. I don't know if Tyrod Taylor is playing. Shady McCoy is not playing. Watkins is mad because he's not getting the ball. The Buffalo offense is in flux right now. Their defense is solid, you know, our secondary is solid. But you better be solid going against Andy Dalton. I thought Andy Dalton has played fantastic this year. His football IQ is off the charts now. And now you have a healthy Kyle Eifert to go along with Green and Jeremy Hill and Jerani Bernard, who are great at the back of catching the ball, but also – Jeremy Hill can pound you inside, and that gives Dalton an extra weapon because he'll play fake. Now he can go down the field to Green and some new, and they got a lot of weapons. See, even though it's at Buffalo, I think Buffalo gives them a lot of trouble, but you know the Bengals are going to win. Bengals should figure out that game. Now the next game is tough. My Steelers playing against the Arizona Cardinals, and every single stat, everything that it screams Arizona winning big. Bruce Arians coming back. I want the revenge. You know, it's just the Empire Strikes Back kind of deal. It comes in, and he avenges him. They tried to force him to retire, and he didn't. And he's coming into Pittsburgh, and we're going to wipe the Steelers out. We're going to wipe them out so bad they wouldn't even recognize the Steelers. I don't think that's going to happen. Whether the Cardinals win a close game or not, okay, I could see that. I don't see the Cardinals as I see the experts. They gave about 20 reasons why the Steelers are going to lose and don't have a prayer with Vic. You don't have your start quarterback. Arizona's opportunistic defensively. They could confuse Vic. They could shut Bell down. They could do all this. I think that the Steelers are going to play very inspired. Especially being an underdog, they're going to be very – I don't think Bruce is going to come in and get the kind of revenge he's looking for. He may win, but I think it's going to be a lot closer game. Wouldn't surprise me if Pittsburgh even won. But I say if Arizona's going to win, it's going to be a lot closer. And I think this defense is playing so much better. And Carson Palmer, and the thing is, Pittsburgh's defensive staff knows Carson Palmer. And he just sits in one spot. And the way they blitz, I think they can give him some trouble. You look at how the Cardinals struggled against the Rams, and that's kind of the blueprint how you deal with the Cardinals. And I think it's going to be a close game. The game that is almost a lock, my lock of the week, is San Diego walking into Green Bay. I think Green Bay is going to win by at least 28 points. I think this is going to be the blowout of all San Diego coming off an emotional loss to Pittsburgh. I think Green Bay is going to wear the San Diego Chargers out. Now, the New England Colts game, I could care less about that game, to be honest with you. I know the Patriots are going to try to run up the score, big deal, because this is October. And the Patriots kind of have a bully mentality. They have a great record. They're the best team. So far, they're the best team in the league. But, because they have a bully mentality, I'm not going to celebrate that on my program. Okay, they run up the score against a depleted Colts team. Big deal. Oh, you're mad. Now, here's the deal. You're mad because they turned you in on the Deflategate, so now you want to come in on a purpose. First of all, don't deflate the footballs. See, we never, ever talk about the root cause of problems. On this show, we are. Don't deflate the football. Just play regular football. Play, keep your nose clean. And when they have not won a Super Bowl without keeping their nose clean, you have Spygate for 3 Super Bowls, and then you have this Deflategate for the other 4th one. I mean, I know New England would love to get one without any controversy. Get another one, you could live without controversy. But you have to look at yourself. I shouldn't have deflated the football. That's all. Just admit that. I shouldn't have deflated the ball. That's all. You know, we don't talk about root causes and accountability enough. But we don't do that on my show. So that's where that is. And then tonight, Gennady Golovkin fights Lemieux. I think Golovkin wins. You know, he has a lot of power. Like I always tell people, he reminds me of Julian Jackson, a tremendously great offensive fighter. Julian might have a little more power, but Julian Jackson, he hits you once and you are asleep. I mean, fast asleep. But they kind of have the same mentality, that they're just going to walk through their opponent. He does not move his head. People think I'm nitpicking. But if he gets beat by an opponent that can take his punches and he never moved his head, you're going to think about these things I've told you beforehand. It's the very reason he should never, ever get in the ring with Andre Ward. Because Andre Ward, he's a bigger guy and he can take his punches. He can box, he'll outbox circles around Gennady Golovkin. But Golovkin doesn't have to worry about Andre Ward. I think he's going to have to worry about Peter Quinlan, who's a good fighter, or Andy Lee, guys like that. The Cotto Canelo winner, he has to worry about that. But he'll win tonight, and they'll go crazy. And HBO has a tendency of rushing and pushing up a guy past the actual pound-for-pound number one guys. They've done that before. They've shoved Pacquiao past Mayweather, even though Mayweather never lost. They're going to shove a Gennady past Ward, even though Ward has a much better resume. Or they're going to shove him past the Klitschko's, and then Klitschko has a better resume. They're going to try to shove him up as number one because of the excitement that he's drawing and how of a great offensive fighter he is. And he hits you with both left and right, but I've seen him get tagged by lesser fighters, and I'm thinking somebody's going to tag him flush because he never, ever, ever moves his head. And the great boxers who have lasted the longest are the ones who can move their head and box, like the Bernard Hopkins and the Sugar Ray Leonards and the Floyd Mayweathers. They're the guys who see the punches, who get out of the way and still counter the punch the living heck out of you. And Gennady isn't that. He just move ahead. I'm moving forward. I'm going to knock you out with a left and a right. I'm going to go to the body, and you're going to go down, and I'm going to keep going, and I'm going to get all these accolades. And, yeah, that's going to happen tonight. But if he has a corner and his corner doesn't make the adjustment, the day's coming where he's going to get blasted by a flush shot. And that's going to and the HBO cash cow is going to go kaput. But that's going to be a while. He's going to win and tonight, and they're going to go crazy because it's finally a no-name fighter that he wins. And HBO's going to be like, see, this guy, he's as great as we're pushing him to be. And maybe he is, but until I see head movement, I'm not ranking him. I mean, I'm going to rank him high in the top five, but I'm not putting him at number one. Sometimes you just got to tell the truth on a sports show, even when it's a bit uncomfortable to say it. But I'm that guy that says things that might be a bit uncomfortable. But I have to tell the truth. It's only a 30-minute show, so I got to feed you the truth all the time. And speaking of that, I will be back Monday.